Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. It's very nice to have you with us on May 29th. And we love you being here, and you're such a part of what we do. We're going to be continuing to talk this morning, both our friends Sarah and Ray, about the importance of the lockbox and to get the money in. I have the great honor of talking about a really cool special premium that I'm going to do in just a minute, and I want you to stay tuned for that because it's a very, very cool thing. We only have 8 of them. It will be the first 8 calls, and I believe many of you will want in on this, so I will sort of set that up as a teaser while I go and also tell you about our wonderful group that we have with us this morning to talk about the news of the day. Last night, as I was putting together this morning's roundtable panel, I immediately came up with 3 stories, and then I added a 4th, and then I said, okay, that sounds good, and then I pressed send. And then another one came in, and I was like, okay, I'll add that one. And then 2 more came in. So it was a busy news night last night. There was a lot going on, and we're going to do our damnedest to get to as much of it as we possibly can. We have a great group to talk about all of this with, and let me introduce them to you now. Terry Gibson, preceptor in public speaking for the Faculty of Arts and Sciences at, you may have heard of this place, it's in the news, Harvard University. Hello, Terry, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Are you okay?
I still have a job. I'm happy to still have a job. with things the way they are right now, that's not to be taken for granted. So, So far, so good. There's a big court case today that's starting today that will have a lot to do with how we deal with international students, not just here at Harvard, but at universities across the country. So we're all waiting to find out more about how that goes.
Are you losing friends and colleagues that do not have jobs?
Not yet, but many of them are looking, and many of them are pursuing other options. Many of them have other options, and they're all quite concerned and scared. And that's especially true on the student front. And I have classes that have a substantial number of international students in them, of all ages, all classes. And this would really change the context of not just higher education at Harvard, but higher education across the country, where you go to these campuses hoping to expose yourself to many different cultures, many different ideas, to really broaden your life experience and help form who you will be as a human being growing up. And it's just concerning that that may be taken away from us.
Well, we'll see. We feel for you, and we're thinking of you, and I just want you to know that if things turn and you want to come back and be a full-time panelist for free, we would love to have you.
Yeah, if you can just carve out like maybe a place where I could put a cot there, somewhere in the back room.
Oh, my God, absolutely.
Maybe like a microwave,
Sure.
If you don't mind, my wife and my cat moving in as well, that would probably work.
Maybe even able to scare up an ice maker. You worry.
Boy. Yeah.
Terry,
I'm all in.
It's wonderful to hear your voice, and I thank you very much for being with us. Mark Grimm joins us as well, professional speaker, speaking coach, and Albany County legislator. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning. Good.
Very nice to have you with us. Welcome Judy Patrick to the program, Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
I am fine. I just want to warn you, I spent last night not watching the news, but watching the Pee Wee Herman documentary.
I
got to shift gears a little bit here.
Yeah, I understand. That looked really good. I've seen a portion of it, a trailer, and it looked terrific. I look forward to seeing that. And we also welcome back a terrific guest, an associate professor of political science at Marist University, Urus Pechenix. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you back.
Likewise. Thanks for having
really
me.
Really nice to have you on the program. And we will get started on the news of the day in just a moment. Here's what I was talking about. This is what we call in the business a super premium. And we have premiums, and they're all great. They're all super. But this one is a big deal, and we're very, very excited about the opportunity because it's something special that I would almost say is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, depending on what your lifetime is. But I think it is a cool opportunity. One of the great writers from our region, one of the great writers in the world, one of the great writers, Pulitzer Prize winning writer, who is one of the finest storytellers in the nation, is Richard Russo, who grew up in Gloversville and has written extensively about this area as well as other mill towns. And has written about Maine, has written about Gloversville in a fictional sense, as well as Saratoga Springs. And he is going to be at Oblong Books. No, that is not true. He is going to be at the White Hart Inn in Salisbury, Connecticut, on Tuesday, June 3rd, this coming Tuesday. And it's an Oblong Books event. I'll be interviewing him for a book show that we're going to be doing and for an event that we're going to be having at the White Hart. The White Hart Speaker Series, the White Hart and Oblong do this incredible speaker series, and I often am lucky enough to get to speak to the people who are there and to do the interviews. Well, we have an opportunity. WAMC on the Road has partnered with Oblong Books to offer a select number of WAMC VIPs the opportunity to meet Richard Russo in person at a private reception prior to the event, and then to attend the Oblong Books White Hart Speaker Series to hear Russo talk about his new essay collection, Life and Art, which is fascinating. I have read the life part. I am halfway through the art part, and it is stunning.
Is that out?
Yeah, it is out. And it was a lot of memoir in there and a lot of, I would say, contemplation on where we are in America at this moment, and looking at his upbringing in Gloversville. It is a beautiful, beautiful book, a collection of essays that come together quite spectacularly. So we only have 8 of these. It is an exclusive lockbox premium, a limited number available. You must call the station to claim. You can't do this online. 1-800-323-9262. It's for the first 8 people who call. The pledge amount is $100 per month, a sustaining membership for a pair of tickets. $100 per month, a sustaining membership for a pair of tickets. And again, you have to call the station, 1-800-323-9262. Richard Russo, the book is Life and Art. And you'll get a voucher for $5 toward the purchase of the book. But then, so you will get to go if you want to get your book signed. You can do that. And we'll have a lovely event. And this will just be for WAMCers. Rick was nice enough to offer up his time and to come in a little early. And I believe his wife Barbara will be there.
She and you call
is.
Him Rick?
Yeah, I do call him Rick. We've been together. We've done this Dog and Pony Show quite a bit. And I love it. In fact, there's an essay in the book, in the new book, Life and Art, about him doing an event at the Spa Little Theater. And then having to go back to Portland, Maine, where he lives, but then deciding just to take a run over to Gloversville to see how things have changed. And I was with him as he was sort of deciding to go over and to do that, because I had hosted the Saratoga event. And but it's fascinating. It's really he is fantastic. The event will be really, I think, something very, very special. 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. Again, you have to call. There are only 8 of these, and you will be in a very select group of people to meet with us and to talk to us. And by the way, if you've never been to the White Hart, the beautiful White Hart Inn in Salisbury, Connecticut. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous inn that has been lovingly restored, and it is just a stunning, stunning place to be. So that's wonderful. The room there is fantastic. It's so intimate and perfect for an event like this. And then, of course, our friends at Oblong, Oblong Books, who partner with not only us, but with the White Hart to put on the speaker series. The Oblong Books is such a beautiful, amazing bookstore that has a rich tradition of doing these incredible events. And we are thrilled to get to partner with them whenever we can. So all of that happens. The event starts at 6:30. We ask you to be there at 5:30 if you're going to take part in this. That's when the meet and greet and the VIP reception will be. And again, at the White Hart in Salisbury, Connecticut, 1-800-323-9262. $100 per month, a sustaining membership for a pair of tickets to attend this incredible event with Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo. For WAMC VIP guests, it's Tuesday, June 3rd at 5:30 at the White Hart Inn in Salisbury, Connecticut. And to tell you how special it is, I bought a new jacket.
So very, it's high fashion also.
Yeah. That's... Oh, well, I don't know about high fashion, but I felt compelled that I had to buy a new jacket. So it's
I'm envisioning seersucker.
No. Although it is a summer color. You are right in that. 1-800-323-9262. We have folks who will alert me as to how this is going and how many we have left, but we only have 8, so my guess is that if you want to do this, you should do this very soon. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-WAMC. Life and Art is the name of the book. Richard Russo will be our guest for a special pre-book event reception for WAMC VIP guests. This is this coming Tuesday at 5:30 at the White Hart Inn in Salisbury, Connecticut. And I know what you may be thinking. Who in the world would you fundraise all day for and then drive to Connecticut to do a reception for? Yeah, Richard Russo. That's who you would do that for. And we are absolutely thrilled that he has done this, and we so appreciate his time. As always, he's been a wonderful friend of the station, and we appreciate this. We hope you will be a part of it as well. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-WAMC. All right, let us go to what is happening in the world. I'll keep you up to date on this. And of course, Sarah and Ray will keep you up to date on this as well. And we'll hear from them in just a few minutes. So let's get started here on the news of the day. We always welcome your thoughts, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right. So we look at the Trump administration as it seems like we always do, doesn't it? But the big news last night was that the tariffs have been ruled illegal. And this, I think, is a fascinating story and one that deserves some of our attention this morning. The U.S. Court of International Trade said the president had overstepped his authority in imposing his reciprocal tariffs globally, as well as levies on Canada and Mexico. This panel of federal judges on Wednesday blocked President Trump from imposing some of his steepest tariffs on China and other U.S. trading partners, finding that federal law did not grant him unbounded authority to tax imports from nearly every country around the world. The ruling by the U.S. Court of International Trade delivered an early yet significant setback to Mr. Trump, undercutting his primary leverage as he looks to pressure other nations into striking trade deals more beneficial to the United States. Before Mr. Trump took office, no president had sought to invoke the International Emergency and Economic Powers Act, a 1977 law, to impose tariffs on other nations. The law, which primarily concerns trade embargoes and sanctions, does not even mention tariffs, but Mr. Trump adopted a novel interpretation of its powers as he announced and then suspended high levies on scores of countries in April. He also used the law to impose tariffs on products from Canada and Mexico to, in return for what he said was their role in sending fentanyl to the United States of America. On Wednesday, the Court of International Trade, the primary federal legal body overseeing such matters, found that Mr. Trump's tariffs exceed any authority granted to the president by the Emergency Powers Law. Ruling in separate cases brought by states and businesses, a bipartisan panel of three judges essentially declared many, but not all, of Mr. Trump's tariffs to have been issued illegally. It'll be interesting to see which ones stick and which ones don't. So what we're going to do, I think, is let me get the lay of the land here. I want to make sure we have time. Hey, Ray, is it okay if we get opening statements and then go over to you guys? Okay, let's do that. Terry Gibson, your thoughts.
Well, I think regardless of how you feel about tariffs, it's good to see that a court is actually holding this administration accountable and saying that, no, you do not have unchecked power. It's also interesting to see the arguments that are being made by the Trump administration, which are really based on what they say is a coherent plan that is going to be damaged if they're not able to apply these tariffs. And the judge is responding that it might be a great plan, but it doesn't abide by the law. We need to hear judges say that more often.
Judy Patrick.
You know, the executive's use of invoking an emergency, he's continuing to do that as a way of building power. And it's a troubling strategy or tactic on his part. It's something we should all be concerned about. Bottom line is businesses in America are confused. We don't know what's going to happen. This obviously will be appealed. I think they started the appeal process last night. So we don't know what will happen with tariffs. All I know is that Trump had a hissy fit last night or yesterday when someone made him aware of the taco trend, which is Trump always chickens out. He thought that was a very mean question, but it's a big meme on social media, the fact that he, you know, starts high. He says it's a negotiating tactic. People in other countries are saying he's just chickening out.
Wow. Mark.
Well, the question is, who sets policy in America? Have we changed? Because we have elections. They elected a president, elected the House, elected the Senate to set policy, not the courts. And what we've seen is this flood of lawsuits against Trump because he wants to do what he said he was going to do during the campaign. And he won all seven contested states that were the key states. So is this constitutional or not? Well, that's yet to be determined. It's being appealed. But what I'm really concerned about is this idea: if you lose election, you don't accept the election, you sue over policy, and the policy should be set by the president, the House, and Senate. And if you don't like the policy, you should elect a different president, House, and Senate.
But okay, two things. One, isn't though the fact that this is a court with many judges that were named by Donald Trump. And I would argue with you that I don't remember hearing these incredible 135% tariffs on countries being an election issue.
Oh, he talked about tariffs, beautiful tariffs. He talked about tariffs a lot. Now, the question is, but in the court said yesterday that some of the tariffs are okay and some of them aren't. So it's a little inconsistent, it seems to me, that we're going to let these judges decide what appropriate the tariffs are. The higher courts are going to decide whether it's constitutional or not. But clearly, tariffs were an important part of the president's campaign. And from a reasonable standpoint, if a country says we're going to impose a 25% tariff on everything you try to import, the idea that we can't say, oh, we're going to have a 25% tariff to make it fair, that seems to me a very reasonable position. So let's wait to see what the higher courts do.
Juris.
Okay. Well, Trump never promised incremental change, right? He ran on the platform that he will change the way things are being done in Washington, and he's known to do a lot of things to challenge the status quo, right? So, you know, his interpretation of this little-known 1970s Powers Act to justify tariffs will be challenged in courts. I mean, I think everyone expected that, including Trump, and now it's being challenged. Of course, Trump is appealing it, and eventually it's probably going to end up very quickly, I would guess, in Supreme Court. And historically, Supreme Court tends to rule in favor of executive branch.
So when we look at the one of the lines that I read in the article, Judy, was that this this group quickly made this decision, which I thought was an interesting choice of words, given the fact that these tariffs have been in place and we've been sort of working on this issue for 2 months. And I would have thought it would have come sooner then.
Agreed. And I was a little surprised. I thought I knew the court system, and I didn't realize this court even existed.
I didn't want to say that out loud, but I didn't know either.
Who did?
And, you know, to follow the rationale that, you know, courts shouldn't be overruling executive actions, then let's just get rid of the courts if that's the logic here. I mean, we have courts like this to make these kinds of decisions. My understanding is the tariffs on automobiles, on aluminum, on steel will remain, and the Mexico and Canadian ones maybe as well. But I think what people who voted for Donald Trump believed was that there would be a more systematic or targeted approach to tariffs. This whole idea of, you know, every time there's a controversial Trump a policy that's enacted, I get the, oh, well, that's what people voted for. Well, people didn't vote for, you know, deporting, you know, people without any criminal history. You know, it's a whole bunch. It's the rationale falls flat for me.
We're going to take a break and hear from our crew of Ray and Sarah and get an update when we come back. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Also a reminder, still on the table, a special pre-book event reception to for WAMC VIP guests to see Richard Russo this coming Tuesday, June 3rd. For the reception at 5:30 at the White Hart Inn in Salisbury, Connecticut, a chance to meet Pulitzer Prize winning author Richard Russo, part of our WAMC On the Road series. And we thank you very much for that. $100 per month sustaining membership. Please give us a call if you're in on that. We only had 8. I don't know what our number is now, but I'll find out. And with that, we turn it over to Ray and Sarah.
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. My name is Ray.
My name is Sarah.
And that's Amber Sickles, who's our fund drive director.
She doesn't
who's in the studio.
Want you
Hello,
to bring attention
Amber.
To her. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. When we last spoke to you before the beginning of the roundtable panel, we were hoping you would help us make a challenge from Anonymous in Slingerlands. And we made it.
Yay!
Thank you, everyone, for your generous pledges. We are so grateful to have made another challenge. Currently in the lockbox, we are at $411,023. That is a beautiful position to be in before the fund drive even begins, but we do want to keep it rolling today and tomorrow to make sure that the fund drive is as short as possible.
Let me tell you something.
Yes, Ray.
I haven't seen this many volunteers in the performance studio for a lockbox segment ever. So thank you all for being here. Now let's make them work, folks. 800-323-9262. They're just practicing for next week when we do this all day long. The fun drive starts at 6 a.m. on Monday. It goes until after dinner time, and then we do it again the next day and the next until the fun drive is done.
That's
this,
right.
This lockbox is really doing the job, and every dollar counts of this $411,000 the minute we start. So that's the idea of the lockbox. We're only going to break into the roundtable a couple few more times to remind you that you can always make a pledge at WAMC.org. You can always call us, although at night and on the weekends, it's not the best idea to call.
Right.
But right now, we have people standing by.
Oh, sure. If you're like, Golly, do I want to make a phone call. Have we got an outlet for you? 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. We do have something to announce.
Ooh,
now. There are announcements all morning long. Another challenge on the table to help us reach another psychologically important goal. One of my, you know, personal favorite numbers, 420. We're going to try to hit 420,000 in the lockbox.
You rebel.
And, oh, I know. And that's a $2,000 challenge. If from Anonymous in Albany, New York, if we can reach 420 by 11 a.m.
So that's $8,977.
We will need a lot of listeners to show up and believe in the station and want to shorten next week's fun drive and help us reach this challenge. You will accomplish a lot with one phone call. You will help us achieve this challenge. You will support public radio broadcasting in the capital region and beyond for the future and future generations. And you will help shorten the drive next week.
And if you ask for it, you'll get a WAMC uninterrupted bumper sticker, which is removable and is really kind of swanky. Listen, we have a few. Do we have time to thank a few people?
We do. Yes, okay. We do.
Thanks to Judy in Clifton Park, who is getting a bumper sticker. Favorite station, listen all the time, says Judy. Jim in Lake Hill, New York, says my everyday favorite thing to listen to in the morning. Thanks to David in Altamont, who is getting a bumper sticker and is a new member. Welcome aboard, David. And by the way, if you want a bumper sticker, no minimum pledge today, but you do have to ask your volunteer for it or mention it online when you make your pledge. It's 800-323-9262. Any amount will get you one of these removable bumper stickers. Thanks to Francis in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, who says, I love the station. Listen and depend on you. Thanks to Caitlin in Albany, listens every single day, donating for her daughter, Ada, who's celebrating her 8th birthday today.
Happy birthday, Ada. Happy 8th, Ada.
And, you know, Ada likes to listen, too, according to this note.
Cool.
So happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Many happy returns. 8 is a good one.
Thanks to Edie in Greenwich, New York. Thanks to Anonymous in Wallkill, who's a new member and getting a bumper sticker. Station covers everything, says Anonymous. Speaks the truth. Listens even while traveling via the app. Oh, they're doing that. That's nice.
That is nice.
Yeah.
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. We're trying to reach the $420,000 point in the drive by 11 a.m., which is about an hour and 19 minutes from now. A lot can happen in an hour and 19 minutes.
You betcha.
1-800-323-9262. If we reach $420,000 in the lockbox by 11 a.m., Anonymous of Albany, New York will donate an additional $2,000.
We're already in the 7,000s now.
Beautiful.
We're at 412-223. Let's keep it rolling. Volunteers are hanging out, waiting for your call. 800-323-9262.
1-800-323-9262. Thanks to Ramunda in Lee, Massachusetts, who says, I listen to WAMC every day. We heard from Dan in Fort Plain. Anonymous in Fly Creek says, devoted to the roundtable. Hopelessly devoted. Doesn't say hopelessly, but I'm adding
the Olivia Newton-John.
Indeed. It's a pretty song. You probably don't like
it. It's not my favorite song.
Well, that nobody said, is it your favorite song?
Okay. Well, let's just move on.
Okay. I like it.
Okay.
1-800-323-9262. Thanks also to Daniel in Albany, New York. Otha in Pittsfield, Mass. Says, I love WAMC, and I've been a member for the last 40 years.
Yes.
And hope for the next 40. That is commitment. Thank you so much. Thanks also to new member Melissa in look at that, a feature in contrasts. Someone has been a member of the station for nearly the whole time the station has been this iteration of an NPR station.
Right.
And Melissa is a brand new member. Back-to-back pledges.
I love it.
Same timestamp even. In 1 minute, a vet member and a new member. Am I making too big a deal out
of
this?
No, but you're making my head explode. I'm trying to go back in time.
Maybe your
years.
Headphones will hold it together.
Well, that's why I get the very heavy headphones.
1-800-323-9262. So thanks, Melissa in Port Jervis, new member. Anonymous in Ballston Spa, thank you. Thanks to Deborah and David in Delancey, New York. And thanks also to Terry in Ballston Spa and Patrick and Lois in Albany, who enjoy the roundtable.
Okay, so as I understand it, if in this lockbox, by the end of the roundtable, well, by the end of our time here,
yes,
before hour three of the roundtable, at 11 o'clock,
yes,
if we can hit the 420 mark in this drive, $420,000, Anonymous in Albany will give us $2,000. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, we're at $412,223 right now. That means we have $7,777 to go. Did that in my head? Might be wrong.
A lot of sevens.
Yes.
1-800-323-9262, WAMC.org. Please help us reach this challenge and keep WAMC on the air and shorten next week's fun drive by doing what you can. How about now?
Yeah.
800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. And we will now return you happily, proudly to the roundtable panel.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And it's wonderful to have you with us. We're talking about the fact that Trump's Liberation Day tariffs have been halted by Court of International Trade. Most of President Trump's tariffs were halted late Wednesday by a U.S. trade court in a sharp rebuke of the president's signature trade war policy. This is interesting because we're not exactly sure which ones are and which ones aren't, but also many of these were on hold in some way or at least reduced. So to get sort of a full, if you remember on the during the Liberation Day ceremony, there was the chart. And so we have to look at that chart and figure out what where it is now, and assuming all of that's off the table. But not exactly sure how that of that works as of now, and we'll see what the trade court does as they continue this, because as we said, this is under appeal. The trade court's ruling that Trump exceeded his authority in imposing tariffs on all imported goods brought an immediate, albeit perhaps temporary, halt to his signature trade war policy. The challenge tariff orders will be vacated and their operation permanently enjoined, according to this three-judge panel. Future contracts on the S&P 500, its stock index jumped 1.4% on the news, but a few hours later, the Justice Department said in a federal court filing that it will appeal. The trade court's decision in a pair of lawsuits filed last month against the government applies to the 10% tariffs that Trump imposed on all foreign products, as well as much higher levies applied to goods from several dozen nations. The president invoked a 1977 law, as we mentioned, that granted him emergency powers over the economy, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or the IEEPA, for those of you keeping score at home. The trade court's ruling also freezes separate tariffs on Mexican, Canadian, and Chinese goods, which Trump imposed to coerce those governments into taking action to counter human and drug trafficking. But import taxes on specific products such as automobiles, auto parts, steel, and aluminum will remain in effect. Terry Gibson, what does that, where does that leave us at this awkward moment?
Well, I think it's important that we keep this whole case in perspective, because it's clear that there are multiple different ways that the president does have legal authority to impose tariffs. Some of those ways do require congressional approval. Some of those ways do not. This ruling is about a very specific way that the Trump administration has decided to do it, based on a very specific law. This court is saying that using that law to justify the tariffs is illegal and constitutional, however you want to say it. It's going to be appealed to at least one, if not two, higher courts, maybe the Supreme Court. All that to say that no matter how this turns out, there's still going to be tariffs. There's still going to be a way for the Trump administration, just as there was a way for the Biden administration, to levy tariffs. So tariffs aren't going away. The question here is, how much power does a president have to unilaterally, without reporting to anyone, how much power do they have to actually imply these tariffs? And that, I think that's what's going to be resolved here. And I think that's important to have a constitutional understanding of where that line is. And I'm not sure we understand where that line is right now. It's also important to point out that this case is partly brought by businesses that are part of a case that is being represented by a conservative-leaning organization that's all about trying to stop government overreach, which is kind of interesting because some of the people that support this organization, the Liberty Justice Center, are people that supported Trump. So I think that that's interesting as well. And if you look at the stock market today, stock markets really like the fact that some of these tariffs might be going away. So lots of things to talk about and think about here.
Yours?
That was a really good assessment, actually. So where are we now with regards to the tariffs? Yeah, I don't see them going away. And even if you look at the ruling, which I quickly skimmed last night, just kind of like seeing what's going on, you know, it basically gives Trump's administration, the way I understand it, 10 days to make it right, what the court, the smaller court, wants his administration to do. But it's already being appealed, and I mean, there'll be appeal upon appeal. And right, one way or the other, I think Trump will find ways to have tariffs in place. And from Trump's perspective, United States is the strongest economic power globally. You know, it can apply tariffs to pressure other countries into doing what it wants. And I mean, he'll keep on trying to do that through one way or the other.
Mark?
Yeah, I think tariffs, as they pointed out, tariffs are not new. Trump didn't invent tariffs. So yes, presidents can use tariffs to have a fair trading system, and it really hasn't been fair to us. So should we just not try to change it? Now, of course, if there's something unconstitutional about what he's doing, the courts, it's the court's role to step in and say that's unconstitutional. But I wouldn't say just because one court has ruled a certain way, that's where we're going to end up. And I know there's confusion, and that affects the markets because the markets want as much certainty as possible. But the reason for the confusion is Trump's a negotiator. And you talk about his chart, and nobody expects that chart to be the final product. He's trying to apply as much pressure as he can. And you know what? We're the consumer giant. We consume well over $20 trillion a year, I think, buying products and services. The next closest one is China at 7.5. So we have to use our buying power to our advantage, and that's really what Trump is trying to do. And if this is ruled unconstitutional, I'm sure they'll try another path to straighten out what is currently an unfair tariff system.
Judy?
So this is all about consolidating and establishing power. Could have gone to Congress and sought approval for these tariffs, but he intentionally wants the Supreme Court to rule on this. And there's a lot of cases like this from some of the cases where he's deported people. He could have gone to Congress and sought the approval, and he's got Congress in his pocket. They would approve it. But instead, he wants the Supreme Court because he believes the Supreme Court will rule in his favor. Another thing about this stay or whatever the court decided, they've stayed the that loophole involving imports of less than $800, which will affect the fast fashion industry. You know, the people who buy the $4 or $5 T-shirts from Temu and Shine, I think, are the two things. That has been put on hold. I think that was considered a major win for people who like to buy a lot of consumable clothing or the rubber ducks or all sorts of things from the Chinese market from at a low cost. So I just think Trump is playing the courts, you know, and the result is confusion among businessmen who don't know or business people who do not know, you know, when to order their imports, whether to go out of business. I don't know when to buy a new washing machine. I just, you know, and I need one.
Yeah,
I'll just hang on. It's a confusion. There's a strategy to negotiating, and they could have been doing this, you know, behind closed doors. You know, I'm always for one for transparency, but this could have been done behind closed doors, so we're not rocketing the market back and forth. The market's up this morning, but I haven't enjoyed the roller coaster my 401k has been on the last since Liberation Day or Freedom Day or whatever it was.
Liberation Day. Eileen says, hopefully someone pointed out to Mark that the president can set policy without breaking the law. People who are opposed to his policies should not be viewed as sore losers just because they point out that Trump is not following the law by taking him to court. If Trump really wants to enact policy, he can do it the way numerous other presidents have done it, by proposing a bill and gathering support for it. Changing policy simply by fiat, without any regard for laws in place, as Mark seems to be suggesting, Trump be allowed to do would make the U.S. a monarchy or a dictatorship.
Yeah, Joe. I've never advocated and breaking the law. The courts ultimately get the final say, so that's just plain false.
I think the people will get the final say. I think the people and the voters get the final say. And I think regardless of where you are on party registration in this country right now, you're looking at the price of groceries,
You're looking at the cost of living in terms of buying a home or paying rent, and you're seeing that those costs are not changing, and in most cases are continuing to go up. And you're watching this sort of back and forth policy, in quotes, if you want to call it one, from the Trump administration in terms of trying to use tariffs. It's what kind of seemed like the only real part of a plan they have. And one day they're on, one day they're off. And every time that happens, I got to believe that the American public, who will decide, lose a little bit of credibility. They lose a little bit of faith in Trump's plan. It doesn't seem like it's working. It doesn't seem like it's consistent. And so I think while this plays out in the courts, it's also going to be playing out in public opinion. And at some point, the public, both Republicans and Democrats, will say, you know, this back and forth, my 401k is up one day, my 401k is down one day, I still can't afford, you know, to buy groceries, the rent's too high, nothing's changing. This policy is not really a policy. It's just a game, and we're losing. And so I think that's important to keep in mind, and I'm sure, you know, Trump's advisors, if he's listening to them, are telling him this.
Could I jump in?
Of course.
So, and I think that's one of the reasons he's not going through Congress, but doing all he can, either through the executive orders or other initiatives he can do in a way to bypass Congress, because he's warning everyone, you know, there'll be a lot of pain, but he hopes that early on this pressure on other countries will get him what he wants. And then by the time midterms come around, he can say, look at me, I got all these great trade deals, and everyone budged. Will that happen? I don't know, but I think that is the plan here.
Jay says, what do you mean policy? There's nothing beautiful about running roughshod over the Constitution. Congress gets to implement tariffs. I don't see any Republicans complaining about judges when the courts overturned any of Biden's policy. In November, I didn't vote for a revocation of habeas corpus due process. I didn't vote to have my retirement accounts killed. And I sure as hell didn't vote to have an Orban-style government. That from Jay. We go to Jeffrey. It's shocking to hear the rationale argued on the show that because certain people were elected, that gives those in power free rein to pursue any policy they want because that's what the people chose. People consider where that argument goes when taken to its extreme. Also, let's not forget that those elections still happened with a system that theoretically has checks and balances. Jim says, Mark missed the class on three equal branches of government. We go to Russ, who says, the question isn't what authority the administration wields, but why court after court has found the president's edicts in violation of the law. Given court delays in acting on appeals, it's likely that this country will remain in a reign of lawlessness for the foreseeable future. Then we go to Lulabelle, who says, wake up, people. Can't all of you see that Trump manipulated the market for his rich friends? Then we go to Joe. Question, is it possible that all of this legal battling from tariffs to immigration is the Trump administration's attempt to consolidate power in advance of what will likely be an adversarial Congress after the upcoming midterms? Thanks, panel, for all you do.
An adversarial Congress after the midterms? I think we already have one of those, don't we?
Yeah, I think Judy said that Trump had the House in her pocket. Are you kidding me? It took him 15 votes for a speaker, then they had to go to another speaker. There's it's such a slim margin in the House, and there's a group of people that are really way out there. So, and Trump, the big beautiful bill is not everything he wanted, but he knows he had to get just one more vote in the House to win it. So that, you know, the House is in a very precarious situation, and that really complicates government affairs.
Paul says Congress could have acted ahead of the court. Many in Congress understood that the executive didn't have authority to impose tariffs in the way Trump did. It is concerning that Congress has abdicated its authority. Diane says Trump is not a negotiator. He is a bully. He loves to have all of our equilibrium off balance. He is playing us to exhaustion. I'm exhausted. I will say that. I am exhausted. All right. We welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We are going to take a break. Don't forget that we have a special super premium on the table this morning. WAMC on the road, inviting you to meet Pulitzer Prize winning author Richard Russo at a special pre-book event reception for WAMC VIP guests. This is Tuesday, June 3rd at 5:30 at the White Hart Inn in Salisbury, Connecticut. A pledge amount of $100 per month, sustaining membership for a pair of tickets. It is an exclusive lockbox premium. We only have a few of these left. You have to call the station to claim it. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-WAMC. We'll be back after this.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
I'm Ray Graff.
The phone number to call to support WAMC is 1-800-323-9262. We are in the midst of a roundtable panel. We will return you to the roundtable panel in just a few minutes. But before that, we need to remind you that we are trying to make a challenge in our lockbox fundraising. And what is our lockbox fundraising?
Go ahead. What's the challenge for us?
The challenge is we will get $2,000 added to the total from Anonymous of Albany, New York, if we can reach 420K by 11 a.m.,
okay,
which is less than an hour from now.
Yep. And you know where we are right now?
Where are we?
415. 299.
That's not bad.
$415,299.
Things are moving. That's nice.
The lockbox is filling up, and that's a great thing. The fund drive starts Monday at 6 a.m. If you've never heard us before, you say, well, isn't this the fund drive? Well, yes and no. This is the lockbox. We're taking a few breaks here and there and raising a little money so that the fund drive next week, which is all day long, it's more of this. You will not hear much programming.
No.
But if we fill the lockbox, we'll be back to regular programming really fast.
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. If you are able to pledge $100 sustaining membership per month, you can attend the meet and greet with Richard Russo at the White Hart Inn next Tuesday night. 1-800-323-9262. We, of course, have WAMC uninterrupted swag that you can acquire for your pledge. But most importantly, please do give whatever you can as soon as you can to help us end the fund drive as quickly as possible and in the shorter term reach this challenge.
And we hope we can get to that 420 mark by 11 o'clock. Thanks to Barbara in Cottekill, New York, in memorial of 27th year of passing of William George Martyrer. Thanks to and thank you for remembering and thank you for your pledge. Thanks to Karen in Albany. Thanks for all you do, says Karen. Love Richard Russo. Can't come to the event. Sincerely, Richard Russo. No, that's from Karen. Richard Russo will be there.
He will.
Thanks to Margo in Saratoga Springs. I appreciate the station. Rely on it for news. I can trust. Margo is getting a bumper sticker, the WAMC Uninterrupted bumper sticker. It's a removable one. And for this lockbox, you know, you just call in any pledge amount and tell your volunteer or do it online, hey, I want the bumper sticker. Doesn't matter what you pledge, we'll send you one of those. Thanks to Catherine and Matt in Stockbridge, Mass., who relies on WAMC. Thanks to Sharon in Del Mar, New York. Really appreciates everything WAMC is doing. Thanks to Richard in Pennsboro, West Virginia. All right.
All right.
Thanks to Diane in Del Mar, New York. Anonymous.
West Virginia Mountain Mama.
Yeah,
take me home.
Take me home.
Roads.
Sure, sure. Thanks to Diane in Del Mar, New York, who is going to the Russo event.
Cool.
Thanks to
See
Anonymous
there.
In Strasburg.
Strasburg.
Thanks to Ruth in Ashford, Connecticut. Listen every morning. Loves the station. Thanks to Anonymous in Charlemont, Mass. You know what?
What?
People are great.
People are great.
Everybody understands what this is about, and thanks to everybody who has made a pledge so far.
There's a challenge we want to make. We have to reach 420K by 11 a.m. to be able to accept a $2,000 pledge from Anonymous in Albany, New York. They've challenged us to hit that goal, and the only way we can do that is through your support. Public radio doesn't chase clicks or answer to shareholders. It answers to the public, and it depends on people like you. When you give, you're making sure that trusted non-commercial media continues to thrive in a time when it's needed more than ever. Now's the time to act. Support WAMC. Help protect the mission of public radio. Give what you can now. Help us make this challenge. Again, with one pledge, you are accomplishing a great many things today. If you want, here's a little trick. Write them on your to-do list. Pledge to WAMC was one item.
Right.
Help shorten fund drive. Two. Support the mission of public broadcasting.
Right.
3, help us make the challenge. 4, and then you make one call and get to check
but
all those off your list.
Make 4 pledges during the call?
No, just one.
Just one.
One pledge accomplishes all those to-dos, those to-dos.
Multitasking. Genius. 800-323-9262. Volunteers are on phones, but we have more staff ready to take your call. Love to do it right now. I know we're going back to the roundtable panel very shortly.
Yes, indeed.
But don't forget the website, WAMC.org, where we don't chase clicks, as Sarah so eloquently put it. We have content. We have so much stuff. You can check it out. You can have fun and learn stuff for long periods of time. And you can also make a pledge. And we're ready to take your pledge 24/7 at WAMC.org. Whatever you do and however you do it, make your pledge right now. We have a challenge on the table, and we hope to hear from you.
1-800-323-9262. Once again, the challenge is for $2,000 that will be donated to WAMC to help shorten our fund drive and increase our total in the lockbox. If we can reach $420,000 by 11 a.m., which is 49 minutes from now, give or take, 48 and a half. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Where are we now, Ray, in the lockbox?
Thank you very much. We're at 415,402. But a lot of people are on the phones.
Beautiful.
They're not in the system yet. We got a ways to go. We have time, but we need everybody to step up. And again, you want a bumper sticker, the new one? They're very nice and shiny and lovely, and they're removable. Doesn't matter what you pledge. Just ask the volunteer. Say, hey, I want one of those. You make a little pledge, you get one. 800-323-9262, WAMC.org. There is never a minimum to be a member of this station. Whatever you're comfortable with, whatever won't break your budget, helps us, and it helps you and everybody else.
Help us make the challenge, please, by 11 a.m. Give what you can. If we reach 420K by 11, we get $2,000 from Anonymous in Albany. Please do keep it going by calling 800-323-9262 or pledging online at WAMC.org. And now we send the airwaves back to Studio A and the Roundtable panel.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A busy morning, busy news-wise, and also as we look to make our challenge this morning in the lockbox. We also have a special WAMC premium, a lockbox premium that we have going on right now. WAMC On the Road, inviting you to meet Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo at a special pre-book event reception for WAMC VIP guests. I'll be interviewing Richard Russo, and we'll be at this VIP reception. It's Tuesday, June 3rd, 5:30 at the White Hart Inn in Salisbury, Connecticut, one of the most beautiful places, and a beautiful, beautiful spot. And you get to come in at 5:30. Meet and greet. We'll have a reception with Rick Russo, and then we'll be doing our interview beginning at 6:30. And you are welcome to join us for that as well. We'd love for you to take part. We only have a few of these left. You do have to call. That's the one thing you do have to call up. 1-800-323-9262 so we can keep track because there is such a small number. 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. And we'll hear more from Sarah and Ray in just a little bit. All right. On to the news and back to the news and talking about what is making news on this Thursday morning. We go to this particular story. We had been talking about tariffs. Then the other big story that came out last night was in regards to Chinese visas. The Trump administration is looking to crack down on Chinese visas, according to Secretary of State Marco Rubio. The background to this is Marco Rubio on Wednesday announced plans to crack down on Chinese holders of student visas and ramp up scrutiny of new visa applicants from China and Hong Kong, escalating the Trump administration's confrontational approach to Beijing. In a statement, Rubio said the State Department would work with the Department of Homeland Security to aggressively revoke visas of Chinese students in the United States including those with connections to the Chinese Communist Party or studying in critical fields. I'm not sure what constitutes a critical field. He did not specify which areas of study would be targeted of the 2,077,000 Chinese students at U.S. universities last year. More than 110,000 were pursuing math, engineering, science, and technology courses, or define what connections meant. About 100 million people belong to the Chinese Communist Party, with membership often used as a fast track to higher social and economic status rather than an act of ideological commitment. Urus, what do you make of this?
Oh boy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we've done something similar already in Trump's first administration. Only back then, Trump was targeting researchers and professors of Chinese descent and folks that took money from China for research. There were some investigations. Some of them found, as far as I remember, that some of the folks indeed transferred some of the, I don't know, information from critical fields like nanotechnology, microchips engineering, etc., to Chinese authorities. For example, you know, some researchers working in U.S. and then they're working on sensitive new technology and they have ties to Chinese government, and then they transfer the know-how to Chinese government. So that was the Trump one. Actions targeting Chinese individuals. And now he's talking about the Chinese students. And from what I understand, complaints are similar, right? Complaints here are similar, that basically some of them may be tied to Chinese government and they may transfer technology that they study and develop in lab in, let's say, okay, I'm not going to name any universities, but, you know, to China. Yeah, so I think that's what it boils down to. But here's the problem with any kind of actions by Trump or anyone else in immigration. We don't know all the information. For example, some of the students and professors who are on student or work visas in this country and who were detained, they were accused of actions that are detrimental to American national security. But I don't think we've seen much of that actual evidence. And it's always tricky when you deal with matters of national security because government will tell you this person is a threat to national security, we should revoke their visa. But if it is a matter of national security, the evidence frequently is also not publicly made available. So, like, what is really going on there? So long story short, there are credible grounds to be vigilant with regards to individuals who may want to transfer sensitive technology to Chinese government. But it's important not to overreact. And how can we balance that, right? Civil liberties and freedom of speech in the United States with need to protect national security.
Meanwhile, this was just released, but in an apparent response to Harvard's claim that it had unlawfully been deprived of an opportunity to defend itself against the government's allegations, the Department of Homeland Security advised Harvard this morning that it has 30 calendar days to respond to an official notice of its intent to withdraw the school from the program that permits it to enroll international students. So that part of this as well. Terry Gibson.
Yeah, I saw that breaking news. I'm still digesting it, and I think what we really need is for the judge to comment on it and sort of put it into context of how that fits into this overall case. I'm just not clear on that right now. But on the particular story about
China,
the secretary saying that they're just going to start doing, a more explicit ban of Chinese visas for students and others, I think that I have mixed feelings about that. As previously said, the United States is right to be careful about its security risk. And I think there's valid reasons to pay attention to all visas that are issued, regardless of country, to make sure that we're not going to do something that is going to be detrimental to our national security. So I think that has to be done, and you would hope that that has been done historically in the past. But at the same time, it's also important to really understand that our country benefits greatly by having international relationships with all countries, including China, and having those relationships send students and professors and researchers over to our universities, not just Harvard, but across the entire country. And it's clear, it's important to acknowledge that Chinese students, Chinese professors, Chinese researchers, they're in all universities across this country, big and small, as are and representatives from other countries as well. And the knowledge they bring
adds to the knowledge that we need here in this country to become leaders in all types of inventions and creations in terms of curing cancer and Alzheimer's and saving the planet and you name it. It's a collaborative effort. And if we continue, as this administration seems to want to do, to engage in an isolationist policy where at every opportunity we seem to want to push people out, keep people from coming in, then we are really, I think, shooting ourselves in the foot and really denying ourselves the opportunity to remain leaders, because other countries, smaller countries, are going to take advantage of this opening and say, hey, you know, you don't want to let them into the United States. Well, we'll let them in here. We'll take those people because we understand that we can really benefit from it. And so it's, I think it has to be done very delicately. And the problem with the Trump administration is nothing is delicate. Nothing. They don't understand the word. Everything has to be big, bold, in your face, with fear tactics attached to it. You know, when you start scaring people, there are real negative consequences of that, both to your own citizens and, of course, to those that maybe want to come and be a part of your society as well.
Judy.
Yeah, I remember back in the 70s, maybe under the Nixon administration, when the Soviet Union and China were considered, you know, these walled-off societies. We didn't know anything about the people there. And then we started to open them up. I think Nixon did this. He, you know, he had the cultural exchanges, ballet companies. And then you started to see, you know, students come to your high school from other countries, and from, particularly from the Soviet Union and from China. And you, the American people got to see that the people in other countries were people as well, and they got to see that we were real people as well. And I think both countries benefit. The Chinese students, the foreign students who come here and learn, they get to get a taste of the, you know, the wonderful American spirit, and they can take that home. And I, as someone who had a foreign exchange student for a year, that connection has stayed all our lives, you know, 20, 30 years later, and they get a sense of us and we get a sense of them. I agree with Terry. What I'm worried about is this broad approach. We're going to see Chinese students who are studying art history get expelled from the country, or those visas. I mean, visas have always been difficult to get. And making it more difficult, it seems like it's not going to be more difficult. They're just going to say no to everything.
Mark Grimm.
Well, I think we have to understand China is really a threat. They will do anything to undermine us. They want to be number one no matter what, and militarily, and certainly they're sending people here that shouldn't be here. But we also know, we've all known Chinese students were terrific, smart as a whip. They like the American dream. Once you get a taste of it, it's pretty tasty. So those are the people we want to keep. So we really have to have a really fair, sensible vetting process. China is sending people here that shouldn't be in this country. And yet there's also a lot of students who are going to be a real value to our for our nation. It's funny, I have a neighbor who's from China. It took him 20 years to become a U.S. citizen, but China fought it all the way. He had to buy his way out of China, and he had to be endorsed by a university. They wouldn't let him go if a university hadn't endorsed him. He was one of the smartest kids in his town, kind of thing. But those are the kind of people we want as neighbors, and they will help us contribute. But we also have to be wary that China is pretty devious, and they will do anything they can to knock us down.
And perhaps that's what Rubio meant in this case, that, you know, we've all do careful vetting. And, yeah, I'm not sure if that wasn't done already. And maybe just more a war of words than actual action, right?
Well, that's
Let's
what
see
I
where
was wondering.
Happens. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what actually was being done.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And also, you know, there are almost 300,000 Chinese students right now in American universities. And, right, exactly, vast majority of them are just here to learn and to learn both information and to pursue their studies. But they also, you know, are exposed to democracy and they hopefully learn also appreciation for democracy. So this could be like a win-win kind of situation. And yeah, what does it mean? More vetting, right?
Anyone else on this?
You know, I think Trump supporters like the idea that, you know, they look at the fact that 31% of Harvard students are international students, and they're thinking, well, why? That's why my kid didn't get into Harvard. I had this discussion with somebody yesterday, and they said, well, it could be that you're that child wasn't as smart as the kids from other countries.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think...
I didn't get into Harvard.
But I think that appeals, that will appeal to some Trump supporters, the idea, oh, well, gee, yeah, but let it be known that community colleges in this area take international students. They've become a lifeblood for a lot of the colleges, and they are, and particularly in this region.
For every student who ever got in their report card, Joseph didn't apply himself enough.
I was a teacher's pet. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah, you know, I think I just figured that was. That was something that was part of the form.
Well, and another aspect about international students, Chinese or not, it's like a free public diplomacy tool, right? Say they come to the United States, you know, all the million, how many international students there are right now, they learn appreciation for the United States, and, you know, when they go back, chances are, you know, if they become leaders, or, you know, or even if they don't become leaders, they do have this fond memory of the United States. So this is like free publicity, free goodwill you build by having international students in the United States. Yep.
Well, or at least it used to be anyway. You know, wonder now with the way, you know, things are going in our country, you know, is it good publicity? Are they going to go back with a good report? Or are they going to go back and say, that was crazy, don't go there? I mean, it, you know, things do change. I think it's also important to point out that we, the United States, also have students, professors, researchers in other countries, including China, not as many as China has here. But just about every country around, you're going to find some students, some professors, some researchers that are visiting from the United States for exactly the same reasons, to learn from other cultures, to share knowledge with other cultures, to benefit from other cultures. And if you believe that we live in this global village and we're all connected and that we all benefit by working together, then that's a good thing.
So I just want to put this into some perspective, and it's hard because this all happened in the last week, and it seems like three separate stories. But you have the Harvard story about losing their ability to have international students. You have the Trump administration looking to require all foreign students applying to study in the United States to undergo social media vetting. And then you see this case that is happening of what Secretary Rubio is talking about in China. So when you put that together, I mean, you certainly see a picture emerging as to what this administration wants or does not want when it comes to international students.
Also, a full court press on Harvard in terms of, you know, their funding, their tax exempt status. I mean, I can they're being swamped with paperwork to justify their research programs. I mean, it's got to be a huge fighting back against this it's got to be an enormous task.
I know, and it must be just really overwhelming for the university, for the students, and yes, Terry, the faculty.
You know, it's also just important to point out, you know, I happen to work here, but one of the benefits of working here is that you learn all of the great things that are going on here. And it's not just at the university, but it's others as well. But you know, we're talking about funding cuts.
I got to take a break, Terry, but I'm going to cut you off even more. Like, you don't have enough being cut from you, from your life. We'll take a quick break and we'll get back to your point right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Also working on the lockbox, and Sarah and Ray will be back in just about 10 minutes to give you an update. We need your help. 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC, 1-800-323-9262. We would love to hear from you. You can also go at WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We do still have a few tickets available for the Richard Russo event, WAMC On the Road, inviting you to meet Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo at a special pre-book event reception for WAMC VIP guests, and that would be you if you call in. Tuesday, June 3rd, that's this coming Tuesday at 5:30 at the White Hart Inn, and it's in Salisbury, Connecticut, a pledge amount of $100 per month sustaining membership for a pair of tickets. It's an exclusive lockbox premium. We only have a few of these, and you have to call to claim 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262, and we'd love to have you join us in Salisbury on Tuesday. It'll be quite an event. All right, let's go to a couple of letters, and then we'll move on to other topics. Let's see. A panelist suggested that foreign students at Harvard go to other American institutions. What if Trump decides that all foreign students lose their visas? And that was one of the things that we brought up. Terry, right before we came, right before we went to break, you were talking about Harvard and the position of Harvard, and I'm hoping you can pick that up to continue what we were saying.
To the letter writer's point, I think anything that's being tried out on Harvard right now, if the Trump administration succeeds, you can bet that they're going to try it out on other universities as well, if they're given the green light by courts to do so. So I do think that all universities and colleges and community colleges are very much paying attention to what's happening here because they realize that they could very well be next. And so that's kind of terrifying. And the point I was just trying to make was that when you cut research, when you cut research funding from universities, whether it be Harvard or any other place, you are really denying the American public access to what could potentially be cures to cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, organ transplants, diabetes. All of those things are happening on Harvard's campus, and they're happening on many other campuses too. And all of those things have been just brought to a complete halt on most campuses, including Harvard, literally just brought to a halt. If you were on the verge of creating cure to cancer or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, you've been told to stop because the money has been cut. Now, if you happen to be, and they're not all international students, but if you happen to be one of the researchers working on this that is an international student, you're being told that you might have to leave the country now and literally walk away from the years of research that you devoted and just leave everything in your lab there to collect dust, supposedly. So from a physical safety perspective, from a national security perspective, from a health and welfare perspective, there's good reason to question the logic behind these decisions. They're short-sighted, and while they serve, I suppose, as red meat to some in Trump's base, they could really devastate the future of this country and make it fairly easy for even a smaller country to become a leader in scientific research.
We got this from a listener, Sharon, who says, I call BS. This is not about national security. It's part of a tragic vendetta against intellectual excellence with Harvard, the highest profile target. If China overtakes the U.S., it will be on Trump as he delivers discipline, brain power, and commitment to inquiry and research out of our country and to more intelligent ones. That's the risk to national security. Harvard has become Trump's enemy as it represents everything he will never be. That from Sharon this morning. Mark?
Well, more Trump hating. I mean, the bottom line is we don't want to just send a student away who hasn't done anything wrong. The issue is to properly vet and ones that are causing trouble. I mean, imagine being a Jewish student and walking to class and have somebody shout in your face from the river to the sea. That's not free speech. That's intimidation. And that those people need to go.
Anybody else before we move? Everyone is just looking at me. Okay. We're going to move on. We only have about 6 minutes left, and we'll move on to one more topic I think we have time for on this morning. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, I think, is the Elon Musk doesn't appear to be around anymore. He is, from his own words, disillusioned, and he has distanced himself from Donald Trump, and he is exiting Washington. He has made it clear he was frustrated with the obstacles he encountered as he tried to upend the federal bureaucracy as an advisor to Donald Trump. The billionaire has made it clear that he is frustrated and that he will no longer be a day-to-day presence in Washington. He once called himself the president's first buddy, and he is now operating with distance from the president as he says he is ending his government work to spend more time on his companies. Mr. Musk does remain on good terms with Mr. Trump, according to White House officials, but he has also made it clear that he is disillusioned with Washington and frustrated with the obstacles he encountered as he upended the federal bureaucracy, raising questions about the strength of the alliance between the president and the world's richest man, Terry Gibson.
Well, on one hand, see you later. No, goodbye. On the other hand, I do think, again, keeping things in perspective, Elon Musk isn't going to go away. You know, when you're the wealthiest person on the planet, you're not going to disappear. And he owns multiple companies. He owns this tunneling company, this boring company, which is actually pretty amazing what they can do in terms of boring tunnels under the earth. And that alone is going to keep him in a very high-profile position moving forward, even if Tesla goes out of business. So he's going to stick around, and I'm sure he's going to pop up again in another high-profile role before you know it. And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, Trump operates without his buddy. So stay tuned.
I do think those who are cynical journalists, Judy, were saying from the very beginning, well, how long is this going to last?
Right. We all saw this coming. I mean, I think there were polls about how long he would be around. I mean, he's gone, but not forgotten. He did make a couple of unusual statements in the last week or so, one in which he says he thinks he's done donating to campaigns or getting involved in campaign finance unless he finds a real reason for it. The other thing is he's not happy with the Big Beautiful Bill. And when played the quotes about how he was unhappy with the Big Beautiful Bill, when Trump heard those quotes, he didn't really come back at him. He just said, oh, he wasn't that happy with it either, without being more specific. So I think that Trump does not want to distance himself from Elon Musk yet. And I think what the mechanisms that Musk put into place are still very viable. And I think the rewards that Musk was after in terms of SpaceX contracts, et cetera, are in place.
Well, also there's the $100 million that he promised to give to the Trump team, which has that check hasn't arrived and or cleared yet. So I assume that has something to do with the Trump not completely ending and severing the relationship.
Right, we're all gonna miss him. But he became a political liability. I think he overestimated his charisma with the American public and the American electorate who turned on him. He is no Donald Trump, and I'm sure that Trump got a little tired of sharing the limelight with him as well.
But I don't think that Elon Musk will just be able to walk away. I think he likes being in the spotlight. And, you know, he tasted power, kind of, right, being around Trump. And he will find reason to get involved in politics and stay involved in politics, right? I mean, he'll be there.
I mean, and to Terry's point, too, I mean, because he is so, there are so many things that major enterprises that he has his hand in, Mark, it seems almost impossible to believe that he's not going to reemerge at some point in talking with the federal government or the Trump administration about other projects.
Oh, he's a brilliant guy who's done amazing things. 2 years ago, he was the darling of the left because of, you know, he was the leader in electric vehicles. But when his politics became more pronounced and supportive, now they demonized him. If you ask people, is the federal government too big? Does it spend too much money? You're going to get a quick yes on that. But once you specifically start to cut spending, and this is what happened, the Congress is not going to cut spending drastically. That's not how politicians act. Because there's for every spending, there's a bunch of people that want the money. So, you know, the idea that we should reduce the federal bureaucracy is a good one. But the problem Musk ran into was that Congress is never going to be able to substantially cut the budget. And it's in some ways it's a sad thing because there's a lot of areas of waste that really could be cut. But what really upsets me is that they started to firebomb his businesses. In fact, we had a state senator here locally in Albany who protested putting a dealership in Colony.
A Tesla
dealership, and because of his politics, that to me was outrageous. Penalizing a company, a successful company, which Musk says is a peaceful company, which it is, and I think that's why he's leaving. He's got so many things in the fire, and he took so much heat that he, you know, when you got his kind of money, you don't need to do it anymore.
I think voicing vocal opposition to a business because you disagree with the business's owners is fine, but I equating it to firebombing, I think, is irrational. I think that certainly there were those, and at one point the administration was saying they were going to seek the death penalty for these cases. They ended up charging the people with misdemeanors. Obviously, it's wrong to be violent against a Tesla dealership. I think the problem with Musk was he overpromised and overhyped what he was doing. And when push came to shove and we looked at what was actually being done, it was far, the savings he was generating, were far less than what he had said he was doing. There was no transparency, and there continues to be no transparency with the Dodge effort.
I'm just saying,
Doge effort, sorry.
There's a difference between firebombing and protest. They're two completely different things. One is violent, but whether the protest was appropriate, that wasn't appropriate either, because you're really penalizing a business, a successful business, where a lot of people on the left and the right are buying these cars, and it was not appropriate, and it shouldn't have happened.
All right, we'll give you the last word. It is time. We're going to go over to our pitch team and see how things are going and our efforts to fill the lockbox before the fund drive begins on Monday morning. My thanks to Judy and Terry and Mark and Yuris. It's wonderful to have you all together. I appreciate your commitment. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate your brilliance in talking about these issues this morning. Thank you very, very much. We'll be back right after this.